This week's Sedra, we have the following paragraph. Ki ha-mitzvah hazos asher anochi mitzavcho hayom, this mitzvah that I am commanding you today, and there are three opinions what that mitzvah is. Rashi says it's referring to the mitzvah of Torah learning. Many commentaries say it's talking about all the mitzvahs. Ha-mitzvah means generic, all mitzvahs. And the Ramban says that it is referring specifically to the mitzvah of tshuva that is alluded to in the parsha before that. And the Torah then goes on to describe some parameters of that mitzvah, whichever one it is. And since we are on the threshold of Yom Noroyim and Slichos, I want to explain to you the parameters that the Torah gives concerning the mitzvah of tshuva. So the Torah says like this, Lo niflesi mimcha v'lo rechokahi. It is not something beyond you or distant from you. And then, according to Ibn Ezra, it explains what that means. Lo bashamayim, he's not in the heavens, way beyond you. Leimor, that you should have to say, Mi'yalo lonu ashamayim av yikocheho lonu v'yashmienu olsov v'nasena. That somebody should have to ascend to the heavens and bring this mitzvah of tshuva down to us. V'lo me'ever layomhi, it's not far away on the other side of the sea. Say more that you should have to say, Mi yaver lonu el ever hayom, who's going to go over the sea, the kocheh olonu, and bring it to us, v'yashmi enu olsov v'nasena, and tell us how to do tshuva. Ki karov elecho hadavar ma'od, because it's very close to you, this thing. V'ticha uvilvav cholasoso, in your mouth and in your heart to do it. That is the paragraph, the parasha. Now let me explain it the way that I understand it. First of all, the Torah says like this, it's not beyond you, not hidden from you, not in the heavens, it's not far away, not over the other side of the ocean. The first foundation before a person can start doing tshuva is that you don't need things that are beyond you to begin to do tshuva. Meaning, you don't need God to awaken you to tshuva. You have to awaken yourself. You have to take the first step. Don't wait until God will come and min hashamayim you will be moved to do tshuva. Don't wait for that, because it's not going to happen. You're going to have to make the first step. But if you make the first step, pischuli pesach yechudo shel machat, then God says, I will help you, I'll open a pathway for you, Bolatar, you come to be purified, I will help you, but you're going to have to arouse yourself and take the first step. Because hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyira shamayim. Everything's in the hands of heaven, except for your spiritual choices, those you have to make yourself. And just like if it would go on Torah learning, okay, according to the other opinion, that this whole thing is going on Torah learning, not on tshuva, same thing. What does it come to tell me? That the Torah is not in the heavens. It's not God that's going to decide what the Torah is. He gave it over to human beings, and we're the ones who have to make those decisions. God gave it over into our hands to learn the Torah and to decide what is Torah and not, and that's what God's will is. So too with tshuva, he gave it into our hands, and we're the ones that are going to have to begin the process. And that is what the Svarno says later on in the Sedra, in the second Sedra, by Yelich. The Torah says the following, that because we stray and abandon the Torah and do terrible things, we are going to be sent into exile, and terrible tragedies are going to befall, and calamities are going to befall the Jewish people. And finally, a time is going to come when people are going to realize that this is all not just a coincidence, it's not just a happenstance, but Ein Elohai Bikirbi Mitsauni Haro Sa'ila. They'll come to a realization, seeming a good one, that because God is not with me, that's why all these terrible calamities befell me. That sounds like a really frum and spiritual awakening. Until now, I thought it was political, social, economic, coincidental forces that brought us on me. Finally, a person's going to come to the realization it's because God is not with me that all these calamities befell me. That is already a very, very high level of recognizing that there's reward and there's punishment and nothing happens in this world coincidentally, right? And that seems to be now you're on the path to doing tshuva. So what would you expect? You expect God to say now, okay, you know, I see that you've made the first step and now we're going to, God help you, bring you back to Eretz Yisrael, whatever, stop the galus. The next sentence says the following, V'anochi hashter ashtir panai mihem. I will then doubly hide my face from you. So why? What did they do wrong? So there are all different interpretations of this sentence, what it means. But the Sfarno says the following. He says that this is not a proper response to calamity. Because God isn't with me, that's why all these things happen. That is a misnomer. It is a total distortion of what happened. God never abandons a person. God's always there. God's not the problem. You're the problem. God didn't leave you. You left him. It's not because God isn't with me that all these sorrows, because I'm not with him. When a person sins, he distances himself from God. God doesn't distance himself from him. God stays, he's always there. Never leaves us. Ani yishena v'libi er, libi zakadosh baruch hu. Doesn't in Shir HaShirim. I'm asleep. And the Medrash says, I'm asleep from the mitzvahs. But libi er, my heart is awake. My heart, that's God. God is always there. Never leaves me. But I'm asleep. I left him. When you do sins, you build mechitzas. You build barriers between you and God. You turn your back on him. But he's still there. So therefore, to come to the conclusion, the reason these calamities befell me is because God is not with me, is a distortion. What's the difference? If God's with you because he abandoned you, or not with you because he abandoned you, or because you abandoned him. What's the difference? Says the Sfarno, the difference is in whose court is the ball. If God left you, then okay, then he has to come back. So what can I do? I'll wait for God to come back. But if you left him, then the ball's in your court. You have to come back. You have to do something. If you're waiting for God, lo bashamayim he. It's not, don't wait for God. It's not in his court. He gave tshuva over to you to do. You're the one who has to daven. You're the one who has to ask mechila. You're the one who has to do tshuva. You're the one who's the problem. You left God, not he left you. So that's the first rule. Lo bashamayim he. The Torah, the tshuva is not beyond you. It's not in the heavens. Don't wait for the heavens to have to initiate your tshuva. You initiate your tshuva. First thing. Another idea inherent in lo bashamayim he is the same thing that it says by Torah learning. If it applies to Torah learning, they interpret it to mean it's not in people whose heads are in the sky, meaning who are bali gaiva, who are haughty people. Okay? You won't find Torah learning by haughty people. Torah is like water. It goes to the lowest place. It goes to people who consider themselves lowly. But we can apply that to tshuva too. People who consider themselves perfect, haughty, right? I'm a tzaddik. I'm not going to do tshuva. What would you do tshuva? Adorava. What's it called? I'm perfect. What should they do tshuva about? So you won't find tshuva in people who think that they're not sinners. And the Sfarno says one other dimension. You don't need a prophet to come and arouse you to do tshuva or to teach you how to do tshuva. You need to start from yourself. That's the first rule. All these things point to the same idea. Right? You need to recognize that you sinned. You need to arouse yourself to do tshuva. Don't blame God that he's not with you. Blame yourself that you're not with him. And you don't need prophets even to show you the way. Just open your heart to the fact that you need to improve. And then we'll see. Okay, next thing. Lo rechoka. It's not far away from you. It's not on the other side of the sea. Meaning the following, I think. I'll tell you a story first. And in this cute story, you'll see what the... I was once, when I was, before I was married, I was, must have been about 18 years old, so I was back home in Miami in the summer vacation from yeshiva. And I davened in a shul where they had a bar mitzvah. It was a Rosh Chodesh, Sunday Rosh Chodesh, so they had a bar mitzvah of a family that were not that frum. They didn't want to let them have the bar mitzvah on Shabbos because it would have been a lot of chil Shabbos. They were driven to shul, and neighbors were, and their friends were driven. So they had they told them to make the bar mitzvah on a Sunday. It happened to be Rosh Chodesh, and so they made the bar mitzvah on Sunday Rosh Chodesh. It's convenient for them and good for the shul. So people were in shul that probably were never in shul in their life or since they were little kids. And people who really knew nothing came to this bar mitzvah. And I was sitting in the back of the shul learning at a table, Gemara, and I get this feeling that I'm being watched. So I look up and I see this guy staring at me. Must have been in his 30s, staring and staring. Finally gets up enough guts and he says, "What are you doing? What is that?" I said, "This is a Talmud. I'm learning Talmud." He said, "Wow." He said, "I envy you." He said, "I am about 40 years old. And I have never, I don't even know the Hebrew alphabet. These words look like Chinese to me. Right? I don't even know the Aleph Beis." He didn't say Aleph Beis. "I don't know the Hebrew alphabet. And you're a young kid, you're 18 years old, and you can read all of this, this big book? I envy you." I said, "It's never too late. You know, Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old before he started learning, and he became one of the greatest sages in the Jewish people." Guy looks at me and says, "Yeah, Rabbi, but Europe was different. Europe was different. Rabbi Akiva didn't live in Europe. Okay. Europe wasn't different. But that's the way people feel. Like, you know, here, you can't do it. If I was there, if I grew up in Europe, then I could be Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva grew up in Europe. But, you know, but in America, it's not for America. People make the mistake to think, Tshuva is somewhere over there. If I just be on the other side of the ocean, and then I could do it. But here not. Here the conditions are different. If I just had this condition, that condition, if this was different, just had a different wife, different husband, different set of circumstances, different kids, different job, right? A little bit more money, a little bit less money, whatever it was, then I could do tshuva. But in the situation I'm in now, it's just beyond me. It's too far away. It's somewhere over there on the other side of the ocean. That's where the conditions are ripe to be religious, to do tshuva. Not in the conditions I have. Second misnomer. Lo be'evar yam. It's not far away. It's not on the other side of the ocean. Right? It doesn't depend. The Sfarno says, you don't even need rabbis to tell you how to do tshuva. You just have to want to repent and change. That starts the process. After that, yeah, you need guidance or whatever. But the initial thing doesn't depend on time, place, circumstance. It depends on you. And that's what the Meiri says. The Meiri says that even though there are a lot of conditions, a lot of laws of how to do tshuva, and what you have to do, and how you have to do it, and the order, but if you accept upon yourself that you want to change, and then I'll learn how to do it. As soon as you accept upon yourself to make the change, your status changes, and you consider it a tzaddik. Now you work on it. The commitment itself, and for that you don't need any circumstances. You can make that decision to want to change wherever you are, whatever time, place, circumstances. It's dependent on you. It's not dependent on outside circumstances. And I think that's one of the lessons we learn from the following pasuk. The Torah says before the Torah was given, that b'chodesh hashlishi l'tseis b'nei Yisrael mi'aretz Yisrael, in the third month from the time we left Egypt, b'yom hazeh bo midbar Sinai, this day we came to the desert of Sinai. Then the next pasuk says b'yisu mirafidim, they left Rafidim and they came to the desert of Sinai. So I know that from the first sentence. It says on the third month, right, the beginning of the month, they came to midbar Sinai. Now they couldn't be in two places at the same time, so they had to leave the place they were and now come to Midbar Sinai. We know from the previous parasha they were in Rephidim. So they must have left Rephidim and come to Midbar Sinai. Why does the pasuk have to then reiterate by Yisum Rephidim, they left Rephidim and came to Midbar Sinai? Says Rashi, in the name of Chazal, to teach me the following lesson. Ma biyosum l'Sinai, just like when they came to Har Sinai, they already had done tshuva, they did tshuva, they were united, they strengthened themselves in their desire to get the Torah. So too, when they left Rephidim, they already had done tshuva. They didn't do tshuva when they came to Har Sinai, they did the tshuva already before they left Rephidim. Now who cares? If when you do tshuva it helps retroactively, what difference does it make when they started? Right now, it helped retroactively. So when does it make difference if they didn't Rephidim, they did now? I think that the Chazal are teaching us the following lesson. If they would have said, you know, Rephidim, that's a place where our hands were weak in Torah, and it's not really conducive to Torah Rephidim, so we can't do tshuva here. But when we get to Midbar Sinai, that's a place that's conducive to spiritual things, then we'll do tshuva. Had they said that, they wouldn't have done tshuva when they came to Har Sinai either. If you say, well, and I can't do it because of this circumstance, that circumstance is never going to be perfect. You're going to find another excuse. So the tshuva can be done anywhere, anytime, any place. It does not depend on outside things. Maybe the consummation and the completeness of the tshuva depends on a lot of conditions. But the initial desire to change, you can do anywhere, at any time, under any condition. And if you think you can, then no condition will ever come which will enable you to do it. And another idea I was thinking of, it's not over the sea, it's not in Chutz La'aretz. Meaning the following. Don't think that you need God, that's the first thing, Lo b'shamayim, it's not in the heavens. Don't think you need God to make you do tshuva. But on the other hand, don't think that it's something that you have to do completely on your own and God doesn't get involved at all. Chutz La'aretz, it says our relationship to God in Chutz La'aretz compared to our relationship in Eretz Yisrael, it's like you don't have a God. Like here in Eretz Yisrael, it's Hashkocha Pratis, God is involved intimately, right? And there it's more distant through intermediaries or whatever. So you may think, okay, God is not the one who's going to arouse me to tshuva. I have to do it completely on my own, and therefore the place to do it is where God isn't involved, out in Chutz La'aretz, where there's no connection. Right? That's also not true. It's not far from you that you have to do it on your own. You have to make the first initial arousal and initiation, and then God will help you. Even though Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mi'ira Shemayim, everything's in your hand, God's hands except for your spiritual choices. But it says if God wouldn't help you to overcome the Yetzer Hara, you couldn't do it. So you need God's help eventually, but you have to make the initial initiation. It's like if you don't declare war, God's not going to bring in the reinforcements and the cavalry to make you win the war. But if you declare war and you start the battle, God will bring in the reinforcements and the cavalry, and then you'll be successful. So it's not Bashamayim, it's not in the heavens, but it's not Eivor LeYam. It's not out of the hands of heaven either. There's a balance. The balance is you start, God will help you. So there's a combination. Another thing it says is lo me'ever layam, it's not across the sea, to people who are too gashmistic. They're too materialistic. You're not going to find tshuva in people who are over the sea, meaning they're merchants and they're into their parnasa too much. They're into the physical, material things of the world too much. That's, if it's going on Torah learning, that's what it's that what they learn. Now, you're not going to find Torah learning by people who are too concerned about the material and physical status in this world. And that's when people who are interested more in spiritual things. But it works to tshuva too. It's not going to be with somebody who thinks they're a tzaddik, but it's also not somebody who's so involved in the physical, material world, he doesn't care about doing tshuva. It's not important to him. Or he thinks he's so far gone, he's so involved in materialism and the physical world that he's just not capable of attaining anything spiritual. You're not going to find tshuva by people who think they don't need to do tshuva or people who think that it's too much for them, that they're not capable of doing tshuva, that they're too involved in the gashmias. And Chutz La'aretz is the hallmark of gashmias. And Eretz Yisrael is more the hallmark of Ruchnius. So somebody who's too chutz la'aretz dik, too embedded in the material things, first of all, he's not going to be interested in doing tshuva. Right? He may feel like he's a sinner, but who cares? You know, I'm in this world to enjoy myself. Or he may feel that he's just too far gone. He's too embedded in the physical material. He's not going to be able to turn around his spiritual world. So what is the truth that that's not the case? Ki krov eilecha hadavar ma'od. The literal translation is, because it's close to you, this thing, very much. It's out of order. It should have said, it's close to you, very much, this thing. The very much is going on the close. How close is it? Very close. So it should have said, ki karov eilecha ma'od hadavar. The object is davar. The adjective to describe how close, very close, is an adjective. So the adjective should be next to the word that it is defining modifying, right? So it should have said, ki karov eilecha ma'od, because it's very close to you, this thing. Not, it's close to you, this thing, very. That's what it says. I was thinking the idea is mamish what we said. When can it become very close? When it starts with you. It has to start with you. You have to make it a dover. You have to make it a thing. You have to make that first statement. Dover is from deeper. You have to say, I am committed to do tshuva. At that point, it becomes very close to you, because then God kicks in and gives you a lot of help. All the help you need, the prophets and the heavenly, arousal, all of that will come if you make it into a thing. First, you make it from within, a thing. Once it's a thing by you, God will make sure that it's a very close thing. He'll make it easy for you to do. So, and that's what it says, v'ficha uvilvavcha lasoso. It starts with your mouth, then it goes to your heart, and then to action. First, you say, that's all you have to do. Anywhere you are, at any level you are, you don't need anybody from the outside, even God, to arouse you. You say with your mouth, I want to do tshuva. And mean it. Then, you know what will happen? Then it will go to your heart, and you'll start to regret what you did, and you'll commit yourself not to do it again. And then you'll do it. Then you'll go through the motions of all the halachas that you have to do with tshuva, and you'll learn them or whatever. But it all starts with the ticha, making that commitment. Saying, I want to do it. Make it a dover. Okay. And this is extremely important, tshuva. Because the Meshech Chachma points out that before the mitzvah of tshuva was introduced in this sedra, constantly God says, I'm putting before you bracha and klola, curse and blessing. But doesn't mention life and death. After the mitzvah of tshuva, it equates bracha with life, and klala with death. Why? Because until you had the ability to do tshuva, okay, if you do good, you get a bracha, and you do bad, you get a klala. But once you have the ability to do tshuva, and you don't, and you continue doing bad, then it's not just a klala, but it's mamish death. Because now you're held responsible. You could have changed everything. You have the ability to change, and not only that, to change everything you did for the bad, for the good. So the not doing tshuva is much worse than doing the sin. So when you just did sins and you didn't have the option of doing tshuva, it's a bracha and a klala. But now, says the Meshech Chachma, now that you have the ability to do tshuva, the sins become compounded. Because why didn't you repent? I gave you a way out. And not only that, you could have repented in such a way that you turned those aveiras into mitzvahs. Where are those mitzvahs that you could have done? So the aveira becomes compounded and it becomes mamash life and death. And that's what the Chasam Sofer says, la'asoso, you can make from the aveira a mitzvah. You do tshuva and you make a new thing that didn't exist before. Before you had an aveira, now you turn it into a mitzvah. The Rav Shachaim Shmulevitz says, but l'mais it works both ways. Because tshuva is so close and so easy, but it depends on you, there's nothing that you can depend on outside of you, On the one hand, it's very easy. You don't need any conditions. You don't need time, place. You don't even need God to help you to begin with. But because of that, it's very hard, because you have to initiate it. And it's very hard for a person to bring himself to that initiation. So on the one hand, it's easy, but it's, on the other hand, it's very hard. You have to just make that little opening, and then God will make the opening bigger. You have to just come and declare and commit yourself to change, and then God will assist you. So it's very easy. All you have to do is have the desire to change, but because it depends on you, and you don't have anything else to hold on to, it's because of that, it's also hard. It's easy, and at the same time, it's hard. And that is the meaning of the following Medrash. The Medrash says that there was a person who didn't even know Aleph Beis, and he wasn't humbled by the fact. He was haughty, and he was making fun of Eliyahu Navi. So Eliyahu said, look, you can make fun of me all you want, but you know, after 120 years, they're going to bring you to the heavenly court, and they're going to ask you why you didn't learn Torah, and you don't even know Aleph Beis. Aren't you afraid? He said, no, I have an answer rehearsed, and I'm not afraid at all. I have a perfect answer. God's going to have to admit that I'm right, and he's going to have to usher me right away into Gan Eden. So Eliyahu said, let's practice. I'll be the Beis and Shomala, you be you. I'll ask you the question, you tell me your answer. Let's see how it holds up. So he says, okay, how come you didn't learn any Torah? You don't even know the Aleph Beis. He says, because Bina lo nitnu min hashamayim, God did not give me the wherewithal to learn. I am dumb, and God knows it's true. So I couldn't learn. What do you want from me? It's not in my capability of learning. So it's not my fault, it's God's fault. He made me dumb. Eliyahu says, sounds good. I ask you one more question. What do you do for a living? So I'm a fisherman. He says, explain to me what that means. He said, well, first we have to make nets, and you have to make the holes in the nets just right, because if they're too big, the fish will go through them, or too small, the fish will see the nets. And then after the net, we'd have to take the nets and put them in a certain place in the river, not too deep, not too shallow, so we catch the fish, then we clean the fish, and we sell them. He says, wow, it takes a lot of brains to be able to do all of that. Where'd you get the brains to do that? For fishing, you have brains, and for Torah, which it says, Kikarov Elecha Hadavar Ma'od, according to that opinion that's going on the learning of Torah, it's very close to you, you don't have brains. And the guy realizes that his answer is no answer. He begins to cry. So Eliyahu says, everybody's going to give those kind of excuses. Right? It doesn't hold water. So the Kotzker Rebbe says, what was the fact? Was this guy dumb and he really couldn't learn? Or he fooled himself? If he fooled himself, how did he fool himself? And if he was really dumb, how did he learn how to fish? Says the Kotzker Rebbe, he really was dumb. He really was dumb. Except when it came to fishing, he knew that if he didn't learn how to fish, he would die. It's do or die. He would die of starvation. When you know that something is important and you have no choice, then you make your effort and then God helps you. So he helped him to fish. But he didn't make the effort to learn. He just gave up. If you give up and you don't see that it's something that is important and you have to make the effort, then you get no help. That's exactly the point. It's very close to you if you'll make the effort. If you won't make the effort, then it's impossible. So yeah, he was dumb. But with all of his dumbness, he could have learned the Aleph Beis and learned something on his level if he made the attempt. Just like he made the attempt to learn how to fish, and God helped him. If he wouldn't have made the attempt, he would have starved to death also. You have to do your ishtadlus. And then God kicks in. Same thing goes for Torah learning. Same thing goes for earning a living. Same thing goes for tshuva. Okay, next. All of this, I want to say that there is what's it called a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And I think it brings out this idea, and the way we've described it, this Gemara really portrays what I just told you. The Gemara says like this. There was a man named Eliezer ben Durdoi, who was a very promiscuous person. And he didn't miss a chance to be promiscuous. He traveled and paid this one, paid that one. He was a very promiscuous person. His whole life. And once he went over the sea to some woman that he heard, and he hired her or whatever. And in the midst of the sin, something happened. And the woman herself said that this guy is worthless. He's never gonna amount to anything. And it hit him in his heart, and he realized that he was taka worthless. And because of that, he started to have the desire to do tshuva. So he went, it says, to the mountains and the hills, and he said, "Help me do tshuva." And they said, "We have enough trouble ourselves, we can't help you." He went to the heavens and the earth, he said, "Help me do tshuva." They said, "We don't have our own problems, we'll help you to do tshuva." He went to the sun and the moon, and they said the same thing, "We can't help you." He went to the stars and the constellations, and they also said, "We can't help you." And then he put his head between his legs, and he realized that it only depends on him. He's going to have to do it. Not the sky, and not the sun, and not the moon, and not the stars. Everything depends on him. And he did such an intense tshuva that he died. And a heavenly voice resounded that, "Ashrecha Rebbe Lozerman," he's already called him Reb, he got smicha from doing this tshuva, and he was ushered into the world to come. So what does this Gemara come to tell me? So at first I saw Rabbi Yonasan Eishitz in the Aris Tavash says that it means the following. He first wanted to blame everybody for his sins. He wanted to blame the mountains and the hills. That's where the demons live. It's demon. It's you know, what's it called? Psychological torment that made me do these sins. Right? I was psychologically sick. I was possessed by a demon. Okay? They told them, "Look, we have our own problems. We're not causing you to do sins." Right? Then he went to heaven and earth. Heaven and earth means it's a conflict between materialism and spiritualism. I just couldn't handle it because this world is a constant conflict between Gashmias and Ruchnias, heaven and earth. And they told him, "Nothing doing, don't blame us." Okay? Then he said, what's it called, the sun and the moon. Maybe it's, you know, the time I was born, or the night time, or the daytime, or whatever, and that's what caused me to sin. And they told him, "Forget about it." Or the kochavim mazolos. The nature, my nature is no good, and my mazel is no good. And they told him, "Forget about it." And then he realized, you can't blame anybody. You blame yourself, right? Not like the psychiatrist, it's your parents' fault, it's this one's fault, society's fault, right? It's not society, it's not your parents, it's not your mazel, it's you. You have to realize that you have to want to change. And therefore, he put his head between his legs, like to roll himself into himself. To enter into himself and not to blame any outside forces. And I was thinking that it works the other way also. That not only he wanted to blame all these things, but he wanted to say, if just the mountains and the hills, those are representative of his parents, of the psuchus avos, right? The avos and imos are compared to the mountains and the hills. Right? I need their help to do tshuva. I can't do tshuva without Sechus Avos, right? And they told him, "Forget about that." He said, "I need the heavens to help me, right? The heavens being heavenly help. I need God to help me." No, God does not have to help you. You have to do it. "I need the sun and the moon. Maybe it's the time, daytime, nighttime. That's what's going to make me. If it would just be a different time, I could do it. Right? I need the mazolos, a different mazol. Just be different circumstances." All these things, like we said. If you can't do it now, you can't do it. It's not the circumstances. All you have to do is want to change. After that, it'll all work out. But if you don't want to, no circumstance in the world is going to make it that you're going to be able to do it. And I saw the Yalkut Eliezer says, why did he put his head between his legs? He said, because my head followed my legs where I wanted to go, my desires. If my legs had followed my head, things would have been different. It's my fault. I have the ability to make that decision. If my head will lead and not my legs, we'll be okay. So that's what it says also, this whole concept that we're saying now, don't make it depend on anything except yourself. The beginning is yourself. That's why it says, Miyale lonu ashamayma, the words, Miyale lonu ashamayma, the Rashi tables, the first letters of those words is Mila. And the last letters is Yud Kei Vav Kei, God's name. I think it hints to two things. One is Mila could be Bris Mila. Just like by Bris Mila, how do you connect that bond with God? You have to start by doing something physical. After that, God makes that spiritual bond. Okay? So it starts with a physical act that you are responsible to do, and then God will be mashlim it. He will perfect it and add and guide and help you and whatever. Or mila can mean a word. Mila is a word. It starts with just a word. Beticha. Make the commitment. And then, havaya, God will make like a new creation. He'll turn over heaven and earth for you if you make that commitment. But he's not going to start the commitment for you. So the beginning is mila. And the end is havaya, God, who is the creator, and he'll create a whole new world for you. Right? He'll make you a new person. But you have to make that first word. You have to start. And that is also Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, to finish this idea off, to polish it off, he says, Lo b'shamayim hi. When a person sins, he causes tremendous damage in all of the spiritual worlds. His sin causes tremendous spiritual damage. And he also causes physical damage, even across the sea. It's like pollution. Right? It's like today people know if they spray, you know, fluorocarbons here, it could be opening a window in the ozone layer and causing, who knows, people on the other end of the world to get cancer because the radiation comes through. So even though every sin causes tremendous spiritual damage in all the spiritual worlds, and it causes physical pollution that wreaks havoc in this world, even across the sea, but God doesn't make you responsible to fix up that spiritual damage and take away the pollution. All he wants from you is you fix up yourself, and I will then take care of the results of your sin. I'll take away the spiritual damage. I'll take away the spiritual, physical pollution that you created. You don't have to worry about that. You just have to worry about correcting yourself. If you correct yourself, I'll see to it that just like you are the cause of these damages, when you correct yourself, I'll take away the damages too. So, again, it all boils down to, don't think that tshuva is overwhelming. It's not. It starts with you, from within you, and with just a commitment. If you do that, then everything, the road comes open, the doors are all open, all the gates are open, God gives you help, and he'll take care of all the tikkunim, all the necessary corrections that have to be made. You start it yourself. That's the main thing. And then, what's it called? We're holding now by the beginning of, you know, the period of tshuva. Starts with slichos. Slichos is just saying, I'm sorry, I admit I did something wrong, I need forgiveness. And from that point on, we have a Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Then God gets involved and he helps us. But it has to start with a declaration and a commitment that I'm interested in changing. Nobody else and no other condition, no other situation, no other time is going to affect that, only you. Okay, and if we understand that, then we will make that beginning and we'll see a very positive and effective end that the Rabban Shom will inscribe us and seal us in the Book of Life for a very happy, healthy year in Ruchnias and Gashmias and Momentus. Yeah.